Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's all getting cut. Allie, this is one of the circumstances where you cut.
Keep it in. Allie?
No. There's a lot of dead end there. Allie? There's a lot of dead air in there.
Keep it in. Every note of our voice.
No. Liz, the longer this bit goes on, the closer it gets to being a cold open. I can't
keep
have that.
It in. Keep it in. Keep it in.
Oh my gosh. Shoot, Eric, shoot.
Gable's Max draft. Real answer.
Stop it. I don't know. Hmm. Nobody does. Whatever this plan is, it has been going on for a very long time. There are many places mentioned. Again, Shank Hill, one of them. We saw what happened in Shank Hill, or at least the results of it. No one was left.
What if there's just one murder? And it's a murder of someone who deserves a murder, and we use that to draw out the cleaver.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then Gable, I don't know if this is in your bag. Dreff and I were talking about it earlier. Mm-hmm. Can you and Jonathan just like claps his hand, like, you know, Can you the cleaver back into the book?
Squish it into the book?
Yeah, do it.
Well, it depends which way the cleaver is. It would be hard to close
or
if it's up.
Fuck him up a little bit. You know.
Okay. I could fight a knife. I feel as if that is within my capabilities.
You do own something considerably larger than a knife to fight with. So maybe you
knife-esque.
Have a size advantage at the very least. The captain smiles despite himself. Okay, so as it happens, the dinner that we were tarried away with for such a long time, sorry to keep you waiting, Jonet Kessler, was fruitful in the fact that Edith Truss was, I managed to have her interested in a conversation, a personal conversation. She found a way to continue to climb the ladder in what she saw of me, or at least the me that I portrayed in that space. And that might be an instance where we have her alone, making the job easier.
And so we're going to go after Truss?
I think we should sleep on this. I think we should sleep on the idea of the murder. Something must be done.
Mm.
And we can have a further discussions amongst the crew as to the things to be done.
Of course.
I know there are two of us here, and one of us feels pretty pro-murder, but as a victim of murder myself, I think that maybe...
Allegedly.
Maybe we should investigate non-murder, again, with the god of murder spooking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It feels an ill-formed idea.
We've got one for and one against.
Real haunted right now.
Undecided. Over here. Jonet, how are you on murder?
I'm feeling a little like aware that I brought the cleaver out. I let the cleaver go, and I'm really itching to get it back. And it feels like we roll up to places where people could be like, you know, offable. You know?
Okay.
Do not be so hard on yourself, Jonet Kessler. Ultimately, I am the person that brought that cleaver aboard the Uhuru.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Captain. It's both of our fault.
And point to you, Jonnet. Is your... The way that you feel bad about opening up the cleaver to the general population, and do you feel in your mind as if the solution to that being murder, could that also be because of the knife as well? The knife is making that solution seem bigger and better to you because of the knife's involvement.
Impossible
to know.
I was about to say, like, is there a... All right, out of game. We're going to move the story forward in a second. I have one more. How does Jonnet check if he is being influenced currently by the Butcher, the Cleaver?
Oh, there's got to be. Okay. Folks, there is a test for this. It is a ritual where you take a deck of luminaries, you take a bowl, a white bowl, and you spread out the deck of luminaries in a ring around the bowl, and you then prick yourself and drop a drop of blood into the center of the bowl, and your blood will flow to whatever luminary you are closest to being in the thrall of.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I think it's neat.
Wait. Hang on. Again, out of game. Did you just come up with that? That's fun.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Yeah, let's do it. I guess this is, I think at this point, Jonnet is like, all right, well, we probably do need to like pump a little bit of brakes on this. Let's take five. Let's gather ourselves. I'm going to prick my finger, going to see which one I'm currently being possessed by, and we'll join up in the morning. And so I think Jonnet finds his way to like a storage crate, because he probably feels like he can't be in the captain's quarters. So while people are resting, he does this ritual just to see like where his head's at and if he's being influenced.
Can I request that we do it then and there in the captain's quarters, actually?
Yeah.
I think unless you specifically do not want Orimar to see.
That makes the most sense. He starts to like go walk down the hallway to set things up, and then maybe like Orimar kind of taps him and like, hey, we'll do it here. He's like, yeah, you're right, we'll do it here. He lays it out on the table and pricks his finger.
All right.
Oh.
So I think like it takes a moment. You can see the blood kind of like swirling in the water. And like normally it would just kind of disperse itself, but it stays mostly collected in like a little cloud, as it were, and sort of lazily drifts. And it ends up in a spot that is between the Butcher and the island.
Two
worst luminaries that are in the deck, really.
Okay.
Is it like when all is said and done and like the in my head it's like a COVID test, like when both lines have shown up 15 minutes later, is it like a straight line?
I think this is a very faint line. Like, I feel like the degree to which it would be, if it was like right up on the edge of the dish, that would be like, oh, heavy thrall, like heavy evidence that somebody is being influenced by luminary. I think what this would indicate is these two luminaries have either recently touched or have an interest in you, more so than like you are under their current influence.
All right. Well, then, what are the attributes of the island? One more time.
Okay. So the island: imprisonment, doom, the cursed sea. This is the luminary that is most deeply connected to the Mariner.
Okay.
That looks like it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm picking that up. Gable.
Maybe we should all invest in the lumen of snoozing, some Z's. Maybe that'll, whoever that may be. And then we can come back to this. I need to check on Angelo. Feel bad that I haven't done that.
A reasonable suggestion, Gable. How about the two of you go and get some rest? I have some, he glances around the room, tidying to do before I retire.
Gable acknowledges this and then looks at your hummingbird, mm-hmm. principality, and the dish of fruit that it feeds on, and just sort of like kind of reaches for an orange slice, making direct eye contact with you to see if it's okay.
I suppose you'd want more permission from principality than myself. Although, please do go to the kitchens and get yourself something to eat before you go to bed.
We have snacks.
Gable looks at the bird.
I feel like the bird glares back.
Okay. Fine. I'll go get a snack.
And Jonnet kind of follows out back to his quarters, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep, but I'm going to try to sleep. I'm going to try.
That doesn't mean anything that we didn't already know about us.
I mean, yeah, like, if you are to think of it, Jonnet, like, it was not that long ago when you were in Dumignon and faced the Mariner in a vision.
Yeah.
You might have severed a direct connection to the Mariner in that conflict, but, like, you know, you have recently touched the Butcher's Knife and you recently fought the Mariner in some capacity. So it's hard to say what that actually means.
Okay, so it's less of a, oh shit, and it's more of like a, well, this is a little kind of business as usual. What do you expect? You grapple with cosmic forces weekly.
It may be an old echo rather than a new scar, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some sleep. Mm-hmm. Get some Z's.
Get some food. Get some sleep.
After the two of them leave the room and Aramar starts to busy himself with a degree of tidying the books away, and then after is sure that he's unlikely to be disturbed, tips the water out of the bowl, refills it, and hovers a finger over the bowl.
Ooh.
He thinks about the kind of various luminaries that he has been in contact with recently, but also he feels himself quietly to be a special case.
Okay, so this is the card that I drew earlier, and mm-hmm. it's a luminary that, like, technically I haven't assigned because it was a prototype luminary that, mm-hmm. that Keith was, like, kicking around that didn't really fit into the setting, so it's been a stand-in for others in a previous drawing. Mm-hmm. I did refer to it as the luminary that would have represented the sovereign. However, like, there is also the possibility that that represents the blank space that the absence of the sovereign represents in the tapestry of the world. So I kind of like the idea. This card wants to come out as it has now been drawn twice in the last couple minutes. What if it is a blank card?
The captain stares at the, I think the amount of, like, the effect is very slight. If you stared at it, you realized it was not a perfect circle, this droplet of blood in the middle of it, but you just feel it's only a hint.
Yeah, it gravitates towards an empty space where the ring of cards was not quite exact or perfect. Which you could have sworn when you arranged them that it was.
The captain sighs and resumes tidying, and I guess we move on.
Yeah. Let's move to morning. I think, like, there are a couple things that you'll probably want to check up on. I remember that there is a reference desk, like, representative within the town. There is a meeting that Truss has requested with Orimar. I don't know that we specified a time and a place for that meeting, so we can...
No, they may send an errand boy along to kind of... I say an errand boy, it will be Mr. Stone, most likely. He will be sent to go.
And we also know that the Uhuru has on order some measure of, like, clothing and whatnot.
Clothing and new paint.
Yeah. So you'll probably want that before you start doing your dark deeds. But yeah, like it's morning and I guess finally, like there is somewhere out there the cleaver being held by a person that it can control. And what its agenda is unclear.
Is this a morning meeting situation? Is this a 10 a.m. stand-up?
If you wanted to be, we can all be near Angelo to sort of like, let's collaboratively talk to this person and explain appropriately what happened to him. And over Angelo, we're having our daily stand-up.
Yeah. It's more because you mentioned that you want to kind of to notify the rest crew, of the crew if we want to go and involve everybody else. But I do like the idea of speaking to Angelo specifically because he knows the people of Sorrow's End better than we do. Mm-hmm. So if there is anybody who's been harboring ill will in a rancid way for an extended period of time, he might know.
Maybe we talk to Angelo later. I like the idea of the stand up first.
Yeah, let's speak to the crew over breakfast then. Yeah. We've had meetings before, and I guess it feels like it's in one of those like really long dining halls with a long wooden table and all the crews, all 200 and dumpty dom.
200 and dumpty dom.
I think there is a ringing of the heart bell that lets people know that a meeting takes place. I feel like the meetings have either taken place on the top deck or probably in the heart of the ship around the heart bell.
It really
depends on conditions and whatnot.
This episode is brought to you by Purina and their certified therapy dogs like Hanley. Say hi, Hanley! Hanley is one of 30 therapy dogs Purina has helped get certified to support kids struggling with their mental health. Purina employees are volunteering their time and family pets like Hanley to help make pet therapy more accessible to patients, students, and kids like me. Learn more about Purina's pet therapy program at purina.com/mentalhealth.
It feels like it'd be heart bell. We don't want like random stragglers to be looky-looing over where we've parked and be like, oh, there's a lot of people on the deck today. What have you got going on? So we can have it below deck. That makes sense.
And theoretically, like you're parked at least far enough away from the town that you shouldn't get those looky-loos. Like you were trying to keep a low profile because you didn't know what the situation would be like or how recognizable the ship, the Uhuru, would be to
indeed
the world at large.
Are all three of us like standing around in front of the heart bell waiting for everybody to arrive? Is that how we're set up?
Probably, yeah. And it's probably a big scramble. It's like meetings like this don't happen all the time. Like there is a day crew and a night crew and whatnot. And everybody that can makes an effort to get to the meeting as quickly as possible. And like there's a trust for the people who cannot leave their posts for whatever reason that the information will be carried to them.
As people like walk into the room, there is a side table with Toku has like a pop-up at station, like hot plate, and he's kind of got like blueberry crepes for folks that which is like a nice delicacy, but it's also like people know it's like if you get the crepes, there's some news. So it's like
it's a serious meeting. The captain stands in standard garb, not in disguise garb. I think the crew is generally aware that he's kind of acting as Julian Larbalest when he's off the ship. So the fact that he's here as Oromar today is of note. Members of the Uhuru, I hope you've all rested well. And thank you for your patience while we have been settling ourselves amongst a new and interesting community of Sorrow's End. I'm bringing you this meeting today to bring to your attention a potential. He opens his mouth to say calamity and swallows it. Clash of ideals within the community that could ripple on to our matters as we move to meet the red feathers on our next job.
There's some like mumbling and rumbling amongst the crew, like kind of curious as to what you could be referring to.
Mm-hmm. In our fact-finding and ingratiating ourselves amongst the community, we have found that there is a luminary presence that has latched on to how the town operates. We have the butcher in our midst.
I think the mumbling in the crew like kind of darkens. And, you know, there are various superstitions that people have tied to guiding or protecting oneself against various luminaries. So there are a couple people who, like, when the name is mentioned and whatnot, quickly turn to their superstitious practice to, you know, keep themselves safe. I'm just curious, what might be one of these practices, do we think?
Specifically against the butcher?
It could be specifically against the butcher or like bad lumens in general too.
Because I like the idea of, you know, people have dietary circumstances for a wide variety of reasons in the world, but I like the idea that there are some people who genuinely go vegetarian or vegan as a way to kind of like keep the butcher metaphorically out of their lives.
Sure, that's good. Are we looking for more?
Yeah, why not?
I feel like there's maybe a parallel superstition where it's like when you suspect the butcher to be in presence, like be around, it's like sharp objects should be on display to make sure that no one's like hiding any like malintent. Mm. So I think it's like if you suspect the butcher, you take your knife and you like you jab it into like the closest wooden substance. So it's like there's my knife. It's on. It's there. Not with me.
Yeah, I think there is like a measure of doing that. I also feel like part of the superstition is you're supposed to keep your blade clean. Like if you've been using it as a tool or whatever, you especially don't want any blood or anything on it. So like everybody very quickly like takes out their knives, takes out a cloth and whatnot. And like I think going over to the mast of a ship must descend beneath the top deck. This is me revealing how little I know of the anatomy of ships, but like it's so tall. Like it has to. They go over to the main mast and just put like their knives in the mast while this conversation is going on.
I think there's also a very small gesture that's sort of like a replacement for a sign of the cross or when people say bless you, like people will make a small like sewing gesture on their skin. It's like, oh, I'm stitching up holes or wounds that are just like, it's more of a nervous gesture.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I love it. Yeah. So there is a bunch of fidgeting and movement that the Uhuru's pirates are doing to defend themselves against the butcher.
Mm-hmm. To give you the two most pertinent facts, and then I will open the floor to the other members of the captain's quarters for their opinions on how to proceed, and then open up to the general floor for if there are any questions from the crew of the Uhuru. Oromar kind of established that we're going to be talking about the current facts that we know, our personal feelings on where we're going to be going with this, and then opening it to the floor for any questions from the crew. The people of Sorrow's End are here desperately interred by a Red Feather initiative to produce the dye that they adorn all of their products and clothing with. The basics of this have already been explained, I'm sure, but the resentment, I'm sure, is obvious that's brewing among the people alongside what they are brewing in the vats of the factories. The butcher, driven to violence and killing intent, very may well latch on to such harbored resentful feelings, and we fear that that may become a fever pitch in the coming days, the method of which will be a cleaver that some of you may even have seen earlier. It is currently loose within the settlement, and can easily fall into the hands of those it deems as a willing or a suitable vessel for violence. This may be a member of the town. This may be a red feather. This may be one of us. Ultimately, our aim is to secure it and make sure it can't cause harm where sorrow would befall its wake.
All that to say, everybody, be on the lookout for folks that seem mad, perturbed, slightly heated, steam coming out of their ears. If it is a source of anger or frustration, that could be where the butcher takes his next swing. All right.
That is the short term immediate issue that involves all of us and our immediate concerns and our immediate safety. Otherwise, in what we have learned about this town and some basic projections of the future, Sorrow's End is on track for calamity. That seems irrefutable. So, without offering up the services of the entire Uhuru, there's a situation in which our involvement with the butcher could also impact the stability and the safety of the town. Our methods of attacking or dealing with the immediate issue could also expand to dealing with the greater issue of the entire situation, the indentured servitude, the illness. That's a much greater proposition. And if that's not something we were interested, I would say let's pop out. But just wanted to put it out there.
Jane kind of like stands up. I just want to get this right. So we landed here at this random town and the butcher just happened to be lying in wait here.
It is a factor under which they operate in Sorrow's End. The dye that they use to make the red feather colors is toxic. And the methods under which the people of Sorrow's End have been poisoned by this dye, a cure, or at least a way to ease the suffering of it, is to give up some of their own flesh for a solace and temporary salvation, which feeds the butcher heavily under this circumstance.
Okay. So the butcher was just here and we happened to land in another place with a strong luminary presence.
It's weird that how often it happens. Yeah. I'll give that to you.
Uh-huh. That's where I am with a big part of this. Most of the places that we have left recently have had some luminous calamity befall them. I speak for myself, but I feel like we do good work every place that we go, and big problems happen to be showing up in front of us. I guess that's all I have to say right now. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to take in.
Well observed, yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. Everyone on this ship is given 110%, and it doesn't go unnoticed. It just seems like we keep getting hit with new wrinkles and new luminaries that just keep popping up and saying what's up to just muck up our stuff. But that doesn't mean that we quit. We don't quit. All right. We double back in. we stick it to the luminaries.
Uh-huh.
And then we get out of Dodge and we go to the next place.
Yeah.
I think now is a good time to segue to our own personal feelings within the council about ways to proceed. Even though we landed here not knowing the situation of Sorrow's End, I cannot in good conscience let the Red Feathers exploit yet another community and leave them bleeding and dry while they prance around in a fancy color that they have copyrighted. If we are leaving here, I would like to ensure that whatever the Red Feathers have established here is dismantled and that the people of Sorrow's End have the power to go and live the life that they deserve. This is a difficult thing to request. After all, historically, there are precious few revolutions that are bloodless. And a bloody revolution is exactly what the Butcher would be thriving on. Ultimately, if anybody is to be placed with the cleaver, I should hope it would be someone. There's a pause. And it's not a proud expression that Orimar has, it's more solemn than that. Someone like myself, where I feel I have the means to make sure it cannot harm anyone else in the short term.
Wait, you want to bring that onto the ship?
Funny story.
Orimar does not answer that question, actually, quite pointedly. I would rather it be in my hands than in the hands of a Red Feather fueled to do worse atrocities than what they've already done.
Captain, I have to protest. I don't want that anywhere near me.
I understand.
I don't think you do with what I have been through and what the past feels like weeks, but it's been a goddamn year. With what I've lost, with how I've suffered, something like that around me. And it's not even just that. I have been keeping it pretty cool, I think, around a lot of you. But this arm of mine is capable of some things. If I were to hold the knife of the Butcher, none of you would be able to stop me.
As captain, it is my vow that if you should take the knife of the Butcher, I will place every effort within my power. I will push myself to the limit to stop you.
Oh, well, that's real comforting, Captain. That's real comforting.
Unfortunately, we are not in a circumstance for comfort. We are in a circumstance for realities.
How about we don't take the knife of the Butcher onto the ship? How about that one?
Gable, like,
wow,
points
these
over,
crepes
over
are really good.
And,
oh, man. So, such a light.
Cooler heads. Let's let them prevail. Cooler heads.
No. Cooler heads should prevail. I'm supposed to be watching my temper after all, because that's a Butcher risk, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should listen to me.
Yeah, but I see your point, and you are correct. If possible, I personally believe that the best method of dealing with our collective issues, find the Butcher and his knife by allowing it to present itself in whomever the target may be. Keep a close eye through a whispered network that is also simultaneously walking amongst the population, attempting to, you know, revolutionize, find weaknesses, deconstruct the factory itself. When the Butcher presents itself at its big violent event, hopefully we know enough to be able to stop it before it happens. And then, through science or magic, destroy the cleaver. That sounds easy. That sounds difficult, but it could be easy.
Mm.
Okay, Wendell, let's have a seat because we're exploring other options here. Personally, I am in favor of helping people where we can. I know that I and many of the others aboard this crew were in to face the Mariner himself when Nordia was under threat. That is, after all, part of what the Uhuru does. And especially as the Red Feathers have caused most of the suffering here, I feel it is well within our right and duty to intervene. I must admit, the idea of having to do that as bloodlessly as possible, lest we incur the influence of the butcher, feels challenging.
Yes.
If this was a simple matter of taking our well-armed and battle-hardened and organized crew and arming and leading the no doubt overwhelming population here against the smaller population of guards, I believe we would be successful. But it would be a matter of cutting down the red feathers. It would be quite bloody.
Indeed. That is to say, I am not so arrogant as to suggest that the way that I would personally choose to proceed is the only way that we shall. I open it to both the rest of the council and the floor for alternate suggestions on methodology of freeing the people of Sorrow's End. Do realize that we do actually have an opportunity here. Being in Sorrow's End gives us access to supplies that give us validity once we reach our final target of the ball and the election. However, if there is a member within the Red Feathers of Sorrow's End who is able to get ahead of us and notify others of our coming, our plans are dashed.
Sky Jacks.
We once again return to the long line of prospective pirates. For the skyship Uhuru, we see one person kind of waddle hop off of the line and sort of bend at the waist to place a stack of headshots and resumes on the table in front of the audition committee. And they go and only just over 5 feet, kind of like hop on top of the stool so that they can like roughly look most of the very tall people sitting on the other side of the table in the eyes and go, hello.
Welcome.
What's up? How are you?
Well,
enthusiasm, I like that. Yes, I'm pleasant. Thank you. And yourself, Mr.
Oh, wow.
Come
okay.
Again. Come again.
Very excited.
All right. Glancing at the resume, how should we address you, Mr. Excited?
Paris.
All right.
Paris Skeeter.
Okay. Okay.
Now, not that we necessarily ask everybody this. Is this a kind of like a nominative determinism going on with these? So
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, call me.
Right. Mr. Skeeter, what kind of skills are you looking to offer the Uhuru with your application?
I'm a good boy.
Okay. I'm going to turn to the rest of the group. We have an opportunity here. listen, we have a bit of a Schrodinger's birds happening underneath this coat. I'm going to wager that there are two birds.
I was going to say at least 12.
A person, yes. If we never open the coat, do the birds exist?
Well, my pitch would be we open the coat immediately. If it's a lot of birds, they all fly out, then the meeting is over. We go to the next person.
Okay, great.
That's my pitch.
All right. Kevin.
I guess I'm concerned about it, you know, causing a scene. There's kind of a lot of people in the queue and all that, but it would be funny. So
extremely
it could be funny.
Extremely funny.
You know what? funny. All right. Okay. Are we going to draw lots for who's going to open?
Jonnet lunges at the bird. Jonnet climbs up on the desk and then just like rockets at the bird straight for the coat.
Yeah. You pull the coat open and it is a griffin parakeet that just stands at 5 feet tall.
Oh,
but it is a beautiful, pretty bird. Yeah, just the one.
I was incorrect.
That is so fair and very acceptable.
How are you?
I feel like I have egg on my face. Here is your coat. It is yours. We almost never do this.
No.
But there are some instances in these interviews in which we are out of pocket. And in those cases, we give you the opportunity, after experiencing what you just did, so sorry again, you get to choose. You get immunity. You can just get on the ship if you want to. After what just happened, if you still want to be on the ship, you get 3 months on the ship. That's our policy. We goofed.
It's in the application contract. Are you looking to be working with our griffins then?
Column A, column B.
Oh God.
Okay.
All right.
This is going to be challenging because now we don't know what the bird has heard to be able to speak back to us. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to flip a dictionary at you so you can see a lot of different words and then maybe communicate clearer at us. Is this working for you?
Wait, Gable, slow down.
Discombobulate.
Okay. What job do you want?
Synodoshe.
What job do you want?
Good boy.
All right. So you want to be someone's pet?
Oh, we can get you.
Column A, column B.
It feels like the good boy position on the ship has probably already been taken. There might already be some friction about our current good boy being replaced. So maybe it's more of an acclimatization thing. Do you want to get one of your griffins up here?
I mean, we have a position for best boy. And key grip is free as well.
This bird does not have hands. It cannot be a key grip. It cannot be a grip of anything.
I feel like it could use its little beak. I don't know.
That is not a union.
Are you union bird?
Are you union? We do have to check.
Because we are not.
Union strong.
We are anti-union.
Let's not say things we can't take back.
I am. Gable is canonically anti-union for no reason.
I think it's one of those things where the bird kind of like narrows its eye and then looks directly into the camera and says, I'm a different bird. The camera like kind of
iris
zooms in Looney Tunes style. The bird winks and the scene is done.
Wait, so are we going to see that bird again?
Impossible to know.
Impossible. Oh, column A, column B.
Column A, column B.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Star Wall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.
You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com.
Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Tyler is on strike alongside his fellow members of the WGA and SAG-AFTRA. You can support Tyler and other striking artists by contributing to the Entertainment Community Fund, linked in our show notes. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. Or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Allie Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at @DreamsToBecome, or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at @Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.